We're starting chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. That's the one that we're on. Called The House of Gaunt. For the rest of the week's potions lessons, Harry continued to follow the Half-Blood Prince's instructions whenever they deviated from libaceous borages, with the result that by their fourth lesson, Slughorn was raving about Harry's abilities, saying that he had rarely taught anyone so talented. Neither Ron nor Hermione was delighted by this. Although Harry had offered to share his book with both of them, Ron had difficulty deciphering the handwriting and could not keep asking Harry to read it aloud or it might look suspicious. Hermione, meanwhile, was resolutely plowing on with what she called the official instructions, but becoming increasingly bad-tempered as they yielded poorer results than the prince's. Harry wondered vaguely who the Half-Blood Prince had been, although the amount of homework they had been given prevented him from reading the whole of his copy of Advanced Potion Making. He had skimmed through it sufficiently to see that there was barely a page on which the prince had not made notes, not all of them concerned with potion making. Here and there, the directions for what looked like spells that the prince had made up himself. "Or herself," said Hermione irritably, overhearing Harry pointing some of these out to Ron in the common room on Saturday evening. "It might have been a girl. I think the handwriting looks more like a girl's than a boy's." "The Half-Blood Prince he was called," Harry said. "How many girls have been called princes?" Hermione seemed to have no answer to this. She merely scowled and twitched her essay on the principles of rematerialization away from Ron, who was trying to read it upside down. Harry looked at his watch and hurriedly put the old copy of Advanced Potions Making into his bag. "It's 5 to 8. I better go. I'll be late for Dumbledore." "Ooh," Hermione gasped, looking up at once. "Good luck. We'll wait up. We want to hear what he teaches you." "Hope it goes okay," said Ron, as the pair of them watched Harry leave through the portrait hole. Harry proceeded through the deserted corridors, though he had to step hastily behind a statue when Professor Trelawney appeared around a corner, muttering to herself as she shuffled a pack of dirty-looking playing cards, reading them as she walked. "Two of spades, conflict," she murmured, as she passed this place where Harry was crouched, hidden. "Seven of spades, an ill omen. 10 of spades, violence. Knave of spades, a dark young man, possibly troubled, one who dislikes the questioner. She stopped dead, right on the other side of Harry's statue. "Well, that can't be right," she said, annoyed, and Harry heard her reshuffling vigorously as she set off again, leaving nothing but a whiff of cooking sherry behind her. Harry waited until he was quite sure she had gone, and then hurried off again until he reached the spot in the 7th floor corridor where a single gargoyle stood against the wall. "Acid pops," said Harry, and the gargoyle leapt aside. The wall behind it slid apart, and a moving spiral stone staircase was revealed, onto which Harry stepped, so that he was carried in smooth circles up to the door with a brass knocker that led to Dumbledore's office. Harry knocked. "Come in," said Dumbledore's voice. "Good evening, sir," said Harry, walking into the headmaster's office. "Ah, good evening, Harry. Sit down," said Dumbledore, smiling. "I hope you've had an enjoyable first week back at school." "Yes, thanks, sir," said Harry. "You must have been busy, a detention under your belt already." Harry began awkwardly, but Dumbledore did not look too stern. "I've arranged with Professor Snape that you'll do your detention next Saturday instead." "Right," said Harry, who had more pressing matters on his mind than Snape's detention, and now looked around surreptitiously for some indication of what Dumbledore was planning to do with him this evening. The circular office looked just as it always did. The delicate silver instruments stood on spindle-legged tables, puffing smoke and whirring. Portraits of previous headmasters and headmistresses dozed in their frames, and Dumbledore's magnificent phoenix, Fox, stood on his perch behind the door, watching Harry with bright interest. It did not even look as though Dumbledore had cleared a space for dueling practice. "So, Harry," said Dumbledore, in a businesslike voice, "you've been wondering, I'm sure, what I've planned for you during these, for want of a better word, lessons?" "Yes, sir." Well, I've decided that it is time, now that you know what prompted Lord Voldemort to try to kill you 15 years ago, for you to be given certain information. There was a pause. You said at the end of last term you were going to tell me everything, said Harry. It was hard to keep a note of accusation from his voice. Sir, he added. And so I did, said Dumbledore placidly. I told you everything I know. From this point forth, we shall be leaving the firm foundation of fact and journeying together through the murky marshes of memory into thickets of wildest guesswork. From here on in, Harry, I may be as woefully wrong as Humphrey Belcher, who believed the time was ripe for a cheese cauldron. But you think you're right, said Harry. Naturally I do, but as I have already proven to you, I make mistakes like the next man. In fact, being, forgive me, rather cleverer than most men, my mistakes tend to be correspondingly huger. Sir, said Harry tentatively, does what you're going to tell me have anything to do with the prophecy? Would it help me survive? It has a very great deal to do with the prophecy, said Dumbledore, as casually as if Harry had asked him about the next day's weather. And I certainly hope it will help you survive. Dumbledore got to his feet and walked around the desk, past Harry, who turned eagerly in his seat to watch Dumbledore bending over the cabinet beside the door. When Dumbledore straightened up, he was holding a familiar shallow stone basin, etched with odd markings around its rim. He placed the pensive on the desk in front of Harry. You look worried. Harry had indeed been eyeing the pensive with some apprehension. His previous experiences with the odd device that stored and revealed thoughts and memories, though highly instructive, had also been uncomfortable. The last time he had disturbed its contents, he had seen much more than he would have wished. But Dumbledore was smiling. This time you enter the pensive with me, and, even more unusually, with permission. Where are we going, sir? For a trip down Bob Ogden's memory lane, said Dumbledore, pulling from his pocket a crystal bottle containing a swirling, silvery-white substance. Who is Bob Ogden? He was employed by the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, said Dumbledore. He died some time ago, but not before I had tracked him down and persuaded him to confide these memories to me. We are about to accompany him on a visit he made in the course of his duties. If you will stand, Harry. But Dumbledore was having difficulty pulling out the stopper on the crystal bottle. His injured hand seemed stiff and painful. Shall I, sir? No matter, Harry. Dumbledore pointed his wand at the bottle, and the cork flew out. Sir, how did you injure your hand? Harry asked again, looking at the blackened fingers with a mixture of revulsion and pity. Now is not the time for that story, said Harry. Not yet. We have an appointment with Bob Ogden. Dumbledore tipped the silvery contents of the bottle into the pensive, where they swirled and shimmered, neither liquid nor gas. After you, said Dumbledore, gesturing toward the bowl. Harry bent forward, took a deep breath, and plunged his face into the silvery substance. And I think we'll stop there. And I hope you like that, my baby kitten. It's bedtime for the pup and bedtime for the kitten. Sweet dreams. I love you so much. Good night, my beautiful girl.